This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
I have visited every country twice, at least. And my reason for that was that I felt I owed every country a repetition just to make sure that my impressions were correct. Because otherwise, you know, the first time round, it might just be a bad mood, or, you know, you've got a headache, or I don't know, you've just broken up from a relationship and whatever. So, you know, it's not fair on the country that your moods may affect your judgment. We often take the world too seriously, and it's good to find what's ridiculous about it.
That is Harry Mitsidis, today's guest. He is one of only 3 people to have visited every country in the world. One could say he is definitely one of the most traveled people in the world, depending on your criteria. Speaking of criteria, Harry is also the founder of Nomad Mania, which is an online community where travelers can track their progress across a number of various lists, and they get ranked based on their travels. We talk about some of the potential moral and ethical issues surrounding the idea of systemized travel and ranking travelers based on their achievements, and that's just one small part of a much larger conversation that you'll hear today, one that I found really fascinating. At the end of the day, just like me, Harry wants to help inspire and empower people from all walks of life to get out and see the world, spend some quality time off the beaten track, and we get into why he continues to pursue his travel goals despite having traveled so extensively already. Plenty of destination recommendations. This guy's been everywhere. And so you'll hear the best region segment, best region for things like food, hiking, where to be pleasantly surprised, and a few other little nuggets in there. The trip that changed his life, best advice for filling your life with as much travel as you desire. His biggest regret as a traveler, something you can do as a traveler that can always turn the tide in your favor, no matter where you are, and loads more. You're in for a treat. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. If you're new, welcome to the community. And if you haven't done so yet, we have a free newsletter over at ZeroToTravel.com/newsletter. You can sign up over there. It goes out once a week. And I'm excited to share this conversation with you today. Of course, nomadmania.com. If you're curious about how someone would go about ranking travelers and some of the lists, and there's plenty of inspiration over there to find new places to discover. There's 1,301 regions. That's how they broke the world up. Harry's visited almost all of these regions globally, and he is one of only 3 people in the world to have visited every country twice, as we mentioned at the top. So you know there's a lot going on in this conversation. Stick around on the back end. I will leave you with a wonderful quote, plus some food for thought on something that he shares at the end that I think can help us on a down travel day. Thanks for listening. Enjoy this conversation. I'll see you on the other side, my friend. Cheers. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Japan.
What are you doing in Japan?
You don't ask a traveler that, Jason. I mean, I'm here to explore more than I've explored already, you know. I mean, what are you doing on planet Earth, you know? So
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
No, well, you know, does any one of us? You know, we try to do what we can. But yeah, I arrived a few days ago, and I've done quite a bit of Japan, but never a long trip. So this time I'm going to stay at least a month and really try to, you know, go a bit more in depth.
Okay. And what does that mean for you? Somebody that's been to every country in the world twice.
Well, I mean, it means going even further off the beaten track, you know, to like abandoned peninsulas and islands that, you know, no one really visits, and hidden corners. And there are some major sites I still haven't done. So a bit of everything. Yeah.
Have you gotten into one of these like sort of less travel places in Japan on this trip so far?
No, we're not on this trip. I mean, I just arrived 3 days ago and I did land in Tokyo, and I'm still in Tokyo trying to get over the jet lag. It doesn't matter how well traveled you are. You still have jet lag issues. So I'll be all right by the end of the week, I hope. And then I'm off. Yeah.
Yeah. It's always a curious thing as a traveler to return to a place that you've been before. You know, it's not, you've traveled way more than the average person, but it's a big commitment financially, and also to kind of, yeah, like you usually like to go check out a new place. So to come back, I think speaks a lot about a country. Why are you spending this long trip in Japan, though, specifically? Do you have a personal connection with the culture there? Or because you're familiar with a lot of places in the world, you could have gone a lot of places, Harry.
True. Well, look, I have visited every country twice, at least. And my reason for that was that I felt I owed every country a repetition, just to make sure that my impressions were correct. I think because otherwise, you know, the first time round, it might just be a bad mood, or, you know, you've got a headache, or I don't know, you've just broken up from a relationship and whatever. So, you know, it's not fair on the country that your moods may affect your judgment. But visiting more than twice means that you have a certain interest in the place, I suppose. And Japan is unique. I mean, it's really such an impenetrable place. I don't think I'll ever figure it out. And the sort of weirdness every day. So it's kind of funny, only that it isn't funny. You know, I mean, this is the real life for most people. And then the food is great. It's like really putting yourself outside your comfort zone. But in Japan, it's all very safe and streamlined. So I wouldn't even call it challenging, really. I think it's fun. Illuminating, and you know, you're bound to get into all sorts of intercultural problems and situations that are entertaining.
You're half Greek, half British. What culture do you identify with the most?
Gosh, Earth. I really don't. I think I feel pretty much at home in Europe. I mean, I'm definitely European over anything else. But that's a tough one. I think when you travel a lot, you kind of become truly a citizen of the world. My friends in Greece think I'm weird, and they say, you're not Greek. And then in England, they say, well, you're not English. So, you know, I'm a bit of an outcast. But I think that can be interpreted as an advantage. So if you don't belong anywhere, you belong everywhere. And that means that, you know, you can kind of make yourself at home. I do like the Balkans a lot. I like places which are reasonably chaotic and not too regulated, but at the same time, not too chaotic that, you know, you can't function there. So I think the Balkans tend to be a good mix. You know, they're not really European or Northern European in any way, and people are very outdoorsy, you know. And then, you know, you can drive your car in all sorts of weird ways and get away with it, which you definitely can't do in Switzerland. So I think but I'm not sure I can say I identify with that culture. I'll say I feel quite comfortable with it, though. Yeah.
But when you go back to Greece and you get like a big plate of moussaka or something, do you feel like you're at home?
Well, the irony is that my mom is not Greek, and yet she makes the best moussaka I know.
Oh,
so,
really? Okay.
You know, so I'm not sure it's the Greek moussaka or just my mother's moussaka that I love. When I get back to Greece, I think it's more of a throwback to my childhood. I kind of start getting nostalgic and reminisce about high school. And then, you know, when you meet a friend whom you've known 35 years, you go down memory lane, and that's always nice. It's like a hot chocolate on a rainy day, you know, really comforting. But I get restless very fast, and I feel that Greek society hasn't really changed as much as it should have since I was a teenager. So it's kind of still where it was 35 years later. And I'm not sure that's good. So, I don't like staying there too long.
What you just described, in some ways, you could, you know, as a traveler, you could look at that stepping into a culture like that and say, oh, this is what I appreciate about this place. It's sort of like frozen in time, for lack of a better term, or as it maintains those traditions. And so going to a foreign country, you can step into that and appreciate it. But then you're saying, but at home where you're coming from, that's not a good, yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, have you thought about that?
Totally, totally. But this is so true. I think when you're talking about a place that you kind of feel is your own, you tend to be very strict with it. Or
that's
at least
true.
I do. You know, yeah. I think you've got a right to be, because you're part of it. So, right. You know, you kind of understand it, which means that, you know, you can really castigate it for not being what you want it to be. But say, I mean, if I go to a country like Iran, and Iran is very much a throwback to the 70s in terms of infrastructure. You know, I mean, a lot was built in Iran in the 70s. And then when the regime changed, maybe not so much. So I feel that Iran is a little bit like, well, I wouldn't say like a Greece of my childhood. That would be going too far. But there are elements I recognize there. And I love Iran for it, you know, which means it gets points for being so old-fashioned. So that is a bit of an irony, you know, the place which isn't mine compared to the one that I feel may be mine. Yeah,
yeah, but I think you're right. If you're dedicated to a certain sports team, it's like you can tell everybody they're crap. But if somebody else says it, you know, forget it.
This is true as well. I mean, many people say, oh, Greece, you know, like its cities are so ugly. And, you know, you think you're sort of descendants from the ancient Greeks, but you're not. And every time people say that, it does hurt. You know, I'm like, well, it may be true, but it still does hurt to hear that people think the cities are ugly. I always say they may not be that beautiful, but they're atmospheric. They've got a lot of culture. You know, Athens has more theaters per capita than most places. You know, I try to always make excuses because, yeah, I think you don't like to hear people being critical about the place where you grew up in, do you?
I live in Norway. I moved here. I'm originally from the States, and now I've been here for, say 8 years or something. I'm a citizen now. It took a long time to really pick up on some of the nuances of the culture. Like, you really have to spend a lot of time in a place. And when you're traveling through, you just can't get to that level. So maybe that's part of it too. Like, if you're growing up in a place, you understand those nuances, and maybe you're in some ways your awareness is heightened around the things that you see that are going on around you that, you know, are seemingly random. Like, when you're traveling through Japan over the next month, I'm sure you're going to see some things you're going to be like, what is this random thing going on? But they know, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I studied sociology. And so I have this in particular, this effort to try to understand how people think, the way of life. This is what I always like observing, you know, going to a cafe and just people watching. But what I find liberating in a country like Japan, I've given up. I don't even try to understand it. I kind of absorb it without interpreting it. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, this is just weird. Like, you know, my TV is on and there's like a couple of men and one is wearing a pink, I think it must be pink, wig, and they're singing odd tunes. It just doesn't make any sense, you know, like, but I'm not even trying to understand. I just take it as it is. I think in other cultures which are more accessible, even in places like India, I think I am trying to understand it and to get the context more. And that is somewhat tiring. So this may be one of the reasons I've chosen to let myself go in Japan for so long. It's like liberating not to really bother.
That makes sense. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. There is a relaxation that comes with that, right? It's just like, let me just actually, well, to adopt a Japanese philosophy, let me just take the beginner's mind here and just go in and just be open and not try to hyper-analyze everything as we tend to do as travelers, as humans.
Yeah. And of course, the upside here is the safety. You know, when you've traveled as much as I have, you know, half the world is dodgy and you've got to watch your back, or you're scared of being kidnapped, or there might be a war. And, you know, Japan is just so, so safe. You know, I can leave wads of cash in my room and I know that they'll be here. You know, no one is going to do anything. So in that sense, it's a very pleasant country to travel in. I'm looking forward to it.
Where are you based?
I am based in the UK, about an hour out of London, but based is a very fluid term. So I probably spend about 100-ish days a year at home. And now I'm on an extended trip out. So I don't even know when I'm going to go back. Probably not until March next year.
Have you thought about where you think the restlessness comes from? You mentioned being a restless person. Where does that, why do you think that is?
You mean why I'm such a nomad?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just using a word that you used a bit earlier. You said I'm a bit restless, and I'm wondering is that something you thought about?
Yeah. Well, I think partially it has to do with not belonging anywhere. You know, my parents are from two different countries. My first language is English, so I grew up speaking English at home in Greece, and that already, you know, was maybe a bit confusing, and I don't think I really attach myself to a place. But I think it's obviously a character thing. So there are personalities which are more homebound and quiet and low key, and there are others who can't stay in one place for very long. And when I mean very long, I mean like 5 days is probably my maximum in one place without you know, then I need to move. But yeah, that must be just my character. I'm a triple Aquarian, so I don't know if that has to do anything with astrology, but it could be.
There was times when I was on the go quite a bit and thinking, sometimes I wish I had the, I was made up of the, you know, I'm just going to be happy in my back garden kind of makeup, I guess. But it wasn't me. I mean, I'm more settled now, but it wasn't me for a long time. And that's okay. But sometimes I would like struggle with that a bit. Like, oh, that could be really nice. Or why can't I just, you know, chill out for a minute?
Yeah, well, having said this, Jason, there are people who are much worse than me. So I know a number of people who don't have a home at all, you know, so they're living. I know this guy, he's actually an artist, quite a famous one. And he's, you know, he just travels with the backpack. He sold everything and he doesn't have a place called home. I assume he must have an address somewhere to get mail, maybe. But he and his girlfriend, wife, they're just traveling all the time. So, you know, the fact that I do have a home still does imply that I try to keep one foot, you know, in this kind of normal, quote unquote, existence. But it's not a very convincing foot. And my friends are always like, where are you rather than how are you when they call me?
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you're being true to what's calling you.
I think in life, it's important to follow your own path. When I grew up in Greece, you know, everyone was encouraged to be a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer. And that was it. You know, you had three acceptable choices. And if you didn't follow that, then, you know, it was frowned upon. Well, in that sense, I think Greece may have changed a little bit. I don't want to be too strict, but I do think there's a bit of a conservative attitude in a lot of the Mediterranean countries, you know, that there's an acceptable path for people. And if you, you do your own thing. And if it's totally unusual, then it's not good. But I think the worst thing you can do is not follow your dreams. And ever since I've been doing this, I'm happy. You know, it never gets old. Travel never gets old. Seeing, you know, these children in Africa waving at me, no matter how many times that scene repeats itself in the different countries, it's always fresh. It always makes me smile and believe that we are good as you know, humans, even though some of the news one hears puts that to the test. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing what's good for me, and that probably means I'm doing what's good in terms of what I was born to be. So it can't be wrong.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions. Towing capacity varies by configuration. See Nissan Towing Guide and Owner's Manual for additional information. Always secure cargo. Now, back to the show. I have, of course, been fortunate to talk to many travelers on this show. The amount of time they spend on the road, at some point, there's kind of like these diminishing returns where, okay, it's like when I start going to and looking at this amazing piece of architecture and I'm just like, whatever, when's lunch? Then I know it's time to go home type of thing. But it doesn't sound like that's an issue with you.
Well, I think travel is a very multifaceted concept. You know, if you're always doing the same thing when you're traveling, you know, if you've got a bucket list of museums, say, or national parks, or if that's what's interesting, then yeah, that will eventually get boring and repetitive once you do it many times. I think one of the secrets is to, to be multifaceted, not to look at only one interesting thing, but look at all the interesting things about travel. And on the website that I am the founder of, Nomad Mania, we have what we call series, which are about 60 lists in categories of things you can do while traveling. So there's things, one of them, my favorite one, is called Bizarrium, and it has all the weirdness you can imagine. There's a lot of that in Japan, so I am going after it. I mean, that is just so varied. How could you be bored? You know, you've got Cat Island, which is, an island which is sort of infested by cats. That's hilarious. You know, and then, I don't know, in the States, you've got a place called Carhenge, which is Stonehenge, but with cars. It's somewhere in Nebraska, and it's on my, you know, it's very high on my bucket list. So I think when you think of the variety of the world, then it's not something that can become tiring. I think some people may have a very specific way of traveling, a method. You know, they either backpack or they like going to nice hotels, for example. And that will become tiring. I do all sorts of different things. You know, I may stay at an Airbnb. I may go to a really good hotel. I may go to a really bad hotel. In the States, I really like these endless drives and then just going to the nearest Days Inn, you know, things like that. That cannot possibly be boring, not in my book.
I still love a good road trip in the States. It is one of the great travel experiences, I feel. You mentioned Nomad Mania, your website. We're going to talk about it, of course. Is that your main business? Is that where you make your living, or?
I wish. No, that is my main expenditure, I would say. So Nomad Mania is not a business. It's a non-profit organization. So we don't make any money from it. It's more there to educate and entertain and have people interested in the world, find out all about its different corners. And we even give travel scholarships to people who want to travel but can't. So it's definitely not my main source of income, but it is my main occupation. So I do quite a lot of work on Nomad Mania, not on a daily basis anymore. I'm too busy traveling, but I do work on that a lot.
And is the, not to get too personal, but people are always curious how one funds travels like this. Are you retired? Is this from other businesses you've had? How do you?
Yeah, it's property. It's not really a secret. You know, once you've got a few properties, a little bit of real estate, then you can probably have enough income to be able to travel. So that's it. Yeah. But, you know, you don't even need that much. I think people misunderstand the amounts we're talking about. Japan may be one of the more expensive places. But, you know, overall, especially if you're coming from a European country, more than half of the world is cheaper than where you're living. So we are very privileged in that way. And I think with a little bit of income, you can do it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Nomad Mania, one of the leading websites in the world of systemic travel, is what it says on the website. And can you explain it all? Because it was pretty new to me, actually. I had not... You're dividing the world up into 1,301 regions. Can you talk about systemic travel, the criteria? Yeah, and then I just have some questions around that and kind of where you guys are going with it and all that sort of stuff.
Well, it started in one way and it's developed in many others. So indeed, it started with the idea that many people ask you, how many countries have you been to? That is like sort of quite a normal question in the travel world. And the idea behind Nomad Mania is that, well, countries are not enough. You need to go much further, because obviously if you've only visited New York, you can't say you really know the US. And similarly, even with smaller countries like Norway, say, if you've only been to Oslo, do you really know Norway? I mean, absolutely not. So the idea was to divide it, to divide the world into a list that made sense overall. And we've come up with 1,301 regions on our main list, which we believe someone should visit. Then we've got many other lists. We recently introduced a list promoting slow travel. So until now, we were often judged as a place which encourages people to just tick, tick, tick. But now we're like, wait a minute, we're also encouraging you to spend a long time in a place. So we've got the slow travel list, where depending on how long you spent in a place, you get kind of credit for that. So people have their own profiles, and that's how it works. You open a profile, it's totally free of charge. You see where you've been, you get neat maps through your profile, and you can fill in these series, which are a source of information. And also, you know, they can indicate where you can go. If you have a special interest in, say, caves, you can look at our cave series and see, you know, about 800 major caves in the world, neatly organized by country. And then if you go to the region page, you will see if there's any caves there. Similarly with things like, aquariums, lighthouses, almost everything that exists out there which you can visit, we have categorized. But beyond that, Nomad Mania does travels as well. We're not an agency. So what we do is we find places which we believe are not really visited, or if they are visited, they're not visited in the way we want to visit them. So recently, say, we did a Nomad Mania trip to Armenia, And I believe that most people who go to Armenia will say, oh, yeah, monasteries, you know, great. And indeed, Armenia has a lot of history. But the way we did the trip, we focused on all the other experiences you can have. So within a week, we did river rafting. We went to a guy who has bees and then makes honey, and he showed us how that worked. We visited an abandoned pioneer camp from the Soviet times. We went to an abandoned nuclear bunker. We visited the border in Iran. So, you know, things that definitely the tours to Armenia don't do. That is part of what we're trying to do, is to become more specific in how we travel. And in that way, of course, we create community. So we are a community-based site. You can make friends within your profiles. And gradually, we're going to work more with this feature. And we've got quite a few members who are now really friends, thanks to Nomad Mania. So that is part of who we are.
Yeah, thanks for the breakdown. I am going to do a little segment here, so be prepared. We're going to do the best region for ... and I'm going to ask you a series of questions. You're going to have to give me your gut reaction. I know you haven't prepped for this, so it's going to be fun. So we're going to get some travel destination tips and some probably off the beaten things, and I'm sure some stories. So that's coming. But since we're on Nomad Mania, I do want to ask you some questions, because I can imagine in your position, and I hear the intention behind what you have, you know, it's a community. Like you said, you're not, this isn't your business. You're not, it's a nonprofit and trying to encourage travel and all this stuff. And I know just through conversations I've had recently through on the podcast and some of the movements, like the flight shame thing in Sweden, where people were, you know, kind of discouraging people from flying, and the climate crisis and all of this, I can imagine for you, it's probably, are you having a hard time kind of managing the, because you guys are ranking travelers. And like you said, like, even though you have the slow travel list now, that hasn't always been that way. That's pretty new. And it does seem like to gamify a bit, like, let's go conquer the world. We're going to get this many, you know, how do you kind of respond to people like that? Like some of the concerns I've heard from others, and I know in your position, I think you're well-intentioned, but there's also all of this, right? So how are you dealing with that?
Well, first of all, many of our users on Nomad Mania are actually overlanders. So, in fact, one guy, Tor Pedersen, he's a bit of a legend. He recently finished traveling to every country without flying. So, you know, and he's one of our members, and we celebrated him. So I definitely don't think that everyone has to fly a lot in order to be a big traveler. Now, the second thing, of course, we all do fly, you know, either a lot or a little. I do think I try to offset this through my positivity. So I'm not sure I'm offsetting it in terms of climate, but I'm trying to offset it in terms of global awareness, global friendship, if you want. I like to smile a lot. I like to meet people, make them feel good, you know. So I think there is something to be said about that, and having people meet strangers they wouldn't otherwise meet, realize that we're not so bad, even if we're from a very different culture. So although that might not offset the climate issue, I think it does give as much of a benefit culturally, globally, to create a better world in different ways. So, well, that's the best answer I can come up with.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I get the spirit behind what you're saying for sure. And I mean, we've had Thor on the podcast before, and what an incredible adventure to go to every country without flying at all. It's tough, you know. I think the travel world and being a part of the industry, you see a lot of changes happening, and the changes that need to be made, frankly, you know, with the ranking system you guys have, it does seem to encourage a certain type of travel, was kind of my point. I'm just wondering, you know, how much you guys are kind of working to pivot to the slow travel thing, or I've heard it said before from others, like, we might look at this era of travel the way we kind of look back at like smoking in restaurants. You know, it's like, I can't believe we used to do that. That's insane. There were like babies there. And we're, just with the climate crisis. You know what I'm saying?
In regards to smoking, you know, I was recently in Azerbaijan and boy, do they smoke there, you know? So I think that
yeah, that still goes on, we know, in some places.
Yeah, yeah, but you know.
So, you get what I'm saying. I'm using an extreme example, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like,
I get totally what you're saying. We did recently have, I think it was in July, Nomad Mania had Sustainability Month, and we put quite a lot of work into that. We had a poll where we asked people how they travel, their sort of preferences in terms of that, and whether they do, pay attention to sustainability as a concept. We looked at how people can focus on more self-development or eco type of travel, rather than travel which is mass tourism, and how they can choose local fixes which kind of help communities more rather than going with mass agencies. I think there is a lot to be said about travel which helps develop local communities more. And in that sense, we are looking a lot into that. And Nomad Mania is trying to develop relationships with local fixers in countries which are difficult to get to, like Mauritania, say, things like that. And I think there, the carbon footprint, once you are there, is minimal in terms of the activities you do. And you know that you are really helping the locals a lot by being there. So I think that is a benefit.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate that you you are the founder and the leader of this to kind of take charge. And I mean, you guys have the opportunity to shift the culture within this sphere of travel in this way. And it sounds like you're taking steps to do that in some ways. Going back to the regions, because I know you have the rankings, I'm just wondering, you could say like your month in Japan, you're going to be able to dive deep, but then you could also look at a ranking and say, all right, somebody that like rents a car and drives through like 10 regions in a day and they just check them off. Like, did they really travel? Did they really see anything? You know, they stopped and had lunch once, but they drove through 10 regions. Like, is that traveling?
Look, I don't like judging people and how they choose to travel. I think everyone should do what makes them happy, as long as it doesn't disturb other people or the world and the environment too much. So, you know, if someone gets their kicks, going to a major temple for 2 minutes, good for them. You know, I mean, I don't want to comment on that. We do have many people who travel like that, you know, and I'm not sure that I can accept that. I think when you're traveling, and especially when you're doing cultural sites, it's very important to understand a little bit about the history, the context. Why was this temple built? You know, how does it fit into the overall culture of that place? You know, and many people don't do that. We had a traveler once who wanted to go to a mosque. And then something happened and they didn't go. And then the guide asked them the next day, well, you know, I can take you to the mosque. And they were like, oh, don't worry. We saw the corner of the mosque from our balcony yesterday. So that's fine. We've done it. And I was like, what? You know, but, you know, you can't change people. So, I think we do have our standards on Nomad Mania for what a visit to, a region is. So, for example, we will reject airports. We reject crossing lines and saying, oh, I've been to a country just because I crossed an imaginary line. Other sites, and even I think Guinness will accept a visit to the hut between the two Koreas as a visit to North Korea. This is particularly contentious for us in the travel community, because American citizens can't go to North Korea anymore. And this causes a lot of issues for people who are trying to go to every country. So we do have our standards, but in terms of, you know, how you enjoy yourself when you travel, I think it's very important to let people be and do what makes them happy.
Fair enough. I like that you had travelers in history. Number one traveler in history, Queen Elizabeth II. That was great. Well, I mean, not Marco Polo, not one of the Spanish explorers. No, Queen Elizabeth II. Is that, I mean, is there bias there? Are you based in the UK, Harry?
No. Well, we only opened her profile last year after she passed away. So, but I mean, she benefits by being, you know, by being in history during the jet age. So she did genuinely visit all these Commonwealth countries and many other countries during her incredible life. So I really think if you look at historical figures, she's definitely been to more nomad mania regions than Marco Polo. I mean, Marco Polo did a lot of the seas, but in terms of how many actual regions he claimed, it's not that many, and it's all in one direction, you know. I'm not sure he did that much of Africa. So, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I liked the idea just to see, you know, who was on top there. I was just surprising to see this lovely portrait of Queen Elizabeth II. All right, so you've been to, out of the 1,301 regions, you've been to how many of them?
1,284.
Wow. Okay, so now I'm doing really bad math, whatever it is, the 17 left, is that right?
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, that's right.
Are they just in war zones or something, or, you know, what?
No. There's a couple really easy ones. I haven't been to Machu Picchu, believe it or not.
Are you saving it up?
Well, no, I'm dreading it. You know, the idea of going at this point, you know, and with all the hordes, I'm really not going to enjoy it. I know that. But anyway, there are some regions that are really easy that I just haven't done, you know, for random reasons. For example, the flight might have been cancelled and I didn't go when I was meant to, and then I somehow never got there. There are a few regions which are really hard to get to. Gaza is one of them, and I'm quite sure I'm not going to get anywhere near Gaza in the near future, nor would I want to, given what's going on there, unfortunately. So, some are harder than others. I intend to try to do as many as I can, but this is not my main aim, you know, to do all the regions. It's just to just understand the world and enjoy my life through travel. This is what makes me happy.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. What is the best way to learn a language? Immersion, of course, but living where the language is spoken and using it every day is not always in the cards for everybody. You can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Developed by over 200 expert linguists, Babbel helps you learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, and it all takes just 10 minutes a day. You want to have those conversations with locals. That's how you connect with a culture. And since I'm based in Norway, I use it to brush up on my Norwegian, but it's also been eye-opening because it's showing me, oh, I've been grammatically incorrect. I've been saying this word wrong. I've been doing this completely the wrong way. So I'm getting less sidelong glances from my neighbors and learning a lot in the process. Here's a special limited time deal for listeners here. Right now, you get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners. At babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel. That's spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thanks to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast, and we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. All right, so I'm going to ask you a series of unfair but fun questions that we're going to have a good time with. And you just got to give me your gut reaction. Like, don't overthink it, but you've been to all of these regions, right? Like, so many places around the world. So now I'm going to ask you the best region for food. You have a teleportation device, and you can just take yourself, like, you can disappear from your hotel in Japan and, like, take yourself to this region for this region for that. So where are you going to go and have a meal today?
I'm going to go to Izmir in Turkey. Anywhere in Turkey would be great, but Izmir is on the sea, so I'm going to have a nice sea view and a fantastic Turkish meal. You can't go wrong with food in Turkey. The meat is great. If you're vegetarian, you've got a lot of options. And then there's all these incredible desserts. I like the rice pudding best. But then again, if I do go for dessert, I'm probably going to get four or five and just gobble them all up. So, yeah.
All right, cool. How about art? I'll just leave it broad.
That would probably be Vienna, based on its multiple historical museums with a lot of art. It could be Italy, but I don't know. I think Vienna is my gut answer to that.
Okay. Gut answer is good. Swimming. You're going to go for a swim.
Ah, Greece. Home country.
Oh, taking it home, baby. Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to go to an island somewhere, probably off the beaten track. I haven't been to the southernmost place in Europe, on the European continent, which is in Greece. It's called Gravdos. It's south of Crete. And apparently it's got amazing water. So that is high on my bucket list, probably next summer.
Take that one then, because you can knock it right out in this exercise. There you go. How about hiking? Are you a hiker or, you know, nature? Let's say getting out in nature.
I don't mind hiking. I wouldn't say I'm the most athletic person around, but I do enjoy a good hike. I'm going to go with Bhutan on that one.
Mm, okay. How about a breathtaking view?
New Zealand, Southern Island, almost guaranteed breathtaking view.
Okay. Best region to go to be pleasantly surprised?
Ooh, you got me there. Pleasantly surprised. All right. I'm going to go with Western Iran, because in Iran, you're going to be incredibly surprised by the kindness and the hospitality of the people. Western Iran is also quite culturally mixed. They've got quite a few minorities there. There's the Kurds, and if I'm not mistaken, the Loris as well, and other Loris spelled L-O-R-I, and a number of other culturally distinct areas, and also some really amazing mountains. If you go in winter, it's going to be totally snowed out. So lots of surprises in Iran.
Nice. Best region to get way out of your comfort zone?
Ooh, that could be a number of places. Way out of your comfort zone, Somalia. Yeah, comfort in all senses of the word.
Do you have a best region for falling in love?
Oh, that's a sweet one. I'm going to say Venezuela.
Venezuela, okay. Yeah.
Venezuela, and specifically Zulia, Maracaibo. I speak from personal experience.
I was going to say, is there a personal story there?
There is, but it's a sad one ending with death, so let's not go there.
Wow, okay. Really? Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah. It's all right.
Along those lines, I guess, have you...
Macabre note. Why don't you ask me another one, which ends it on a positive note? You know?
Well, I can come back to some more of those questions. But yeah, I'm wondering if you've used travel to, like, for healing, for example. Or, you know, like, intentionally use travel as a tool for, yes, let's say self-healing or something like that.
Totally, totally. So, when said person died, in fact, I was totally devastated and shocked. It was all very sudden. And I remember, I was numb for about 2 days. And then my next impulse was, okay, where do I go next? You know, where am I going to travel to? And I remember on that occasion, I went to Russia and I did a region in the Altai Mountains, which I hadn't done, and I felt that, you know, mountains are a good place to be if you need to heal, a kind of isolated, far away, you know, beautiful views and that. And I do think that, you know, rather than dwell on something sad, travel can help you obviously get out of your familiarity, out of your everyday perspective. Also, when you're traveling, you need to deal with mundane things. You know, you need to make sure you don't lose your bag. You need to make sure you have somewhere to sleep. These things which occupy your brain while you're going through trauma of any kind, they can really help you get over the difficulties faster. So these practicalities of travel, which you wouldn't have to deal with if you were at home, say. So absolutely, travel can be healing. Luckily, I haven't had to do any of that in the past 10 years. So it's been traveling because I like it rather than for, you know, that kind of purpose.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds like that was a really big moment in your life. How did that change your approach to life?
You know, it really did. I've been extremely lucky. My parents are still alive and I'm 51 now. So, you know, I'm conscious of the fact that I'm fortunate. So I haven't had much loss, and that was definitely a loss. I think this just taught me to be as kind as I can with people and try not to fret about little things that don't matter. I think this is something anyone will tell you. It's not really great wisdom. I think, though, we forget all too often, you know, through the issues we have in daily life, you know, or a train may be late and we start stressing and it suddenly becomes our focal point. And why am I going to be late? Or, you're stressed, you're going to miss a connection at an airport. And I think often I try to remind myself this is not important. So if you miss it, it may be a bit of a hassle, but at the end of the day, there are those things that really matter and many of those other things that don't. And it would be good if all of us tried to remember that once in a while.
Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to step out of the situation and get balanced out. What really matters to you right now?
Well, right now, given all the wars that are going around, it really seems to me like the world has exploded. And I'm very politically conscious, perhaps partially because I've been to many of the places at war, but also, you know, if you're a traveler and interested in geography and history, then by definition, you're going to pay attention to these things. So I think right now, what matters to me most is really finding for the world to find a solution to all these conflicts and all this hate that seems to be everywhere around us, you know, and all this polarization that's just getting worse rather than better. You know, having traveled a lot, I'm really aware, or I believe that people are good almost universally. I've never had a really nasty experience anywhere. And I've had a lot of people who've been kind with me when they didn't have anything to gain. So I think I really love our world and the people in it. And you know, seeing people hate other people so much, this kills me. And I hope a solution is found. I can't think how, but let's hope so.
You mentioned the kindness of strangers, and that's another one of the themes I've heard over many interviews, just what you said. I mean, I don't think our brains aren't designed for being bombarded with this much news and information all the time. And so when you get the privilege to travel, it is, and you see how much kindness is going on out there, it is a good thing, I find, to lean on in these times, to remember, to stay connected with, right? Even though all this madness is happening around us, or seemingly happening all the time everywhere, but we know there's kindness around everywhere all the time too. And can you share an act of kindness that you experienced on the road that really stuck with you? Maybe something you haven't shared before?
Yeah, and I have not shared this before. And this actually happened to me in Japan on another trip, not now. That was about 10 years ago, I think. In my effort to go to all these bizarre places. I landed on an island called Daito, which is about 40 minutes flight from Okinawa. And I gave myself the day on the island without having planned anything. And so I landed and I thought, well, you know, let's see what's going to happen here. I'm going to have to walk a lot. I didn't know anything about the island. And then a guy in the car just stopped and he's like, in English, where are you going? And to cut a long story short, his name was Satoshi. And he lived on the island, although he was originally from Tokyo, and he had kind of escaped to that island because he couldn't take the grind of the huge city. And he spent the whole day with me showing me Daito. We went together to a natural pool. There was a cave. We went for lunch. We talked about life. Then he took me to an elderly couple who lived there. And I remember they said, you are very rich. This is something that has stayed with me forever. And they didn't mean it in the sense of financially rich. They meant it in the sense of because of your travels, you have become a very rich person, well, sort of spiritually, I suppose. I just remember that day, and I keep on thinking, this was a guy who knew nothing about me. I never saw him again, and he was just kind. He spent his time, his energy, his gas, just to show a stranger around the island. That was so sweet of him.
Yeah, that is... That's beautiful, you know?
Yeah. And it was totally, totally unplanned. And this is the good side of travel. Sometimes when you let things happen, they do.
It's interesting how the energy you give off as you go about your day in a foreign place impacts those around you, or can be a catalyst in some cases for experiences like this. You know,
yeah. That couple, by the way, that Japanese elderly couple, at the end of the day, when I was back at the airport in Daito, they came to the airport and I asked Satoshi, well, why are they here? You know, are they traveling or something? And he said, no, they're here to say goodbye to you because you've been such an important thing for them today. And again, you know, I was like, how, you know, but you know, these little things that when you think about them more, you realize how travel can really have an impact in ways that you would never think it would. Yeah.
Have you been to any of the micronations? I know you guys recently wrote about that on your blog. That's an interesting concept.
Ah, right. Yes. Well, that's funny. Yes, I have. Well,
explain what they are so people know what it is we're talking about.
Okay. Well, micronations are made up, kind of. They're not real countries, although the ones who made them up will swear they are. But they're kind of maybe made as a joke, although maybe not. They often do have a defined area, which might be the home of the founder, or perhaps a little bit more than that. And they are a thing for a few people. There's even a thing called MicroCon. I didn't know that. So, you know, just like you've got Comic-Con and whatever. So the sort of micronation people meet and have a conference and exchange.
This is like everybody that founded their own country, which is in their bedroom or whatever, you know, or in the middle of the desert or whatever.
Not all. Well, yeah. I mean, the one in the middle of the desert, Slow Jammers. Stan, I mean, the founder is on Nomad Mania, and he's a friend of mine, Randy. I mean, that's just so great a concept, though, because he goes around wearing this ridiculous outfit and, claiming he's the Sultan. And it's just such a skit on everything. And you know, he's got these silly rules like Crocs are not allowed. I mean, it's funny. I think there's... obviously, we don't take them seriously, but at the same time, you know, when you've got so much war around, you need someone who says, no Crocs on my territory. You know, that is a good counterbalance to all this madness. Yeah.
Yeah, the satirical commentary or societal commentary, let's say, in a way.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I've been meaning to have him on the show, actually, but I think he's out in California, so it's the time difference is a bit of a challenge, but
yeah,
we'll have to make that happen. Yeah. The Sultan of Slow Jamistan, shout out to him. It's a funny concept. Have you ever thought about founding your own micronation? I mean, you could, you know, draw a circle on your
No. That's, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life, but that's not one of the things I'm interested in. I leave that to the sultans of the world, you know, let them do what they do. I might go to the next micro condo. I'm just really curious to see the characters who will emerge there and all the memorabilia being sold. It's just amusing.
You mentioned the subcategory on your site of, I forget what it was, the bizarro.
Bizarrium. Yeah. Yeah.
Share some things that probably like somebody listening has literally never heard of before. Some places that you can see that around the world that...
Yeah. Well, in South Korea, there is a penis park where you go. I mean, there's literally like thousands of phallic statues around, you know, and this is totally normal. And you go, well, for them, and you go for a nice stroll to the park and they're just there. So that is like really out of it. Then you've got, in northern Romania, you've got what is called the Happy Cemetery. That is a must-see. So the Happy Cemetery has colorful tombstones which make fun of the dead. So, for example, if someone was killed in a car crash, the tombstone may have like a car crashing. Literally, it's like designed actually wooden, so they're painted and they're carved, and then they may have a ditty in Romanian about the person and how he died. I find that genius.
I love that.
Apparently there's only one. Yeah, that's so good. That's in a small village called Sapinta. It's on the border with Ukraine on the Romanian side. If anyone is ever in northern Romania, it's really worth going there. And I would say that is one of the more serious/cultural things of Bizarrium. You know, it is really strange, but it's worth it. The States has a lot. You know, the States are great when it comes to this. So I don't know. I mentioned Carhenge. Then you've got another thing in Amarillo. You've got a site with cars that are sticking out from the desert for
Cadillac
no good
Ranch.
Reason.
That's Cadillac.
Yeah, that's it, I think. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've been there. So, I mean, that kind of thing.
We love our roadside attractions in America, you know? We love our roadside attractions.
Oh, you do, you do. What I love about the States is that the States make something out of nothing, and that's great. You know, you make a whole attraction where there isn't really one, but that gets people to enjoy a day and, you know, go out, and why not? I was recently in one in Turkey, which again had random statues of everything from a woman with a horse to quasi-historical figures on a mountaintop. And it was just like a kitsch fest of horrible art where the people going there might not have seen it in the same way I did. So I think they were taking the statues seriously, but I was just like, okay, especially the woman with the horse. I mean, that one was totally random. So yeah, these bizarriums are among my favorites. Again, because I think we often take the world too seriously, and it's good to find what's ridiculous about it.
To me, the Happy Cemetery thing kind of sums up what you just said, right? It's like, those are the kind of things you might see if you're going through the haunted house at Disney World, you know, like the jokey tombstone, but people actually did that in real life. Like, that's cool. If I was going to be buried in a cemetery and they had one of those here in Norway, I'd be like, put me there and like put a good joke on my tombstone. Like 100 years can have a chuckle and I can still somehow make people laugh from the beyond.
Well, you know, contact them. They may accept you, Jason. Yeah.
What do you think happens when you die?
You know what? There's the fairy tale version and the realistic one. But I don't know. I have dabbled in tarot and astrology and whatever when I was younger. I would like to believe that there's more to everything than what we see. But it seems to me, as a logical thinker, that that is just wishful thinking. So it's probably just nothing. But yeah, in line with my positive message for the world, let us hope that maybe there is more than we believe, and that the energy that you have as a soul or as a human being kind of continues in a different sphere or dimension that we can't even understand. Mm. I'd like to believe that.
You have written some books. I'm just wondering, yeah, you can talk about those if you want to share. I know you have the one about the traveling con man. Welcome. Or excuse me. That was the curious case of William Bacheland. And maybe people have heard about him before. That aside, I mean, we talk about the books, but I'm just wondering what writing does for you.
Well, writing is therapeutic. So, with both my books, I found that I used writing as therapy in a way, much more than I used travel. So with the first book, the writing of it was therapy from what I had just experienced. So it is about the story of this conman who managed to come into our travel community and ended up conning people out of what is probably about $1 million just by pretending he was someone different and doing so that well that everyone fell for it. I happened to be the one who uncovered it, not because I wanted to, but just because at one point I realized something was wrong, and I just couldn't I couldn't stop searching until I got the answers I wanted. And then I was so angry, so frustrated at the injustice of it all, that writing the book, I think, managed to vent a lot of that negative energy. I could tell there were parts when I was writing the book when I was getting really angry, you know, and after writing it, you know, I'd need to take a few hours to calm down. The second book, I think, is more the result of the war in Ukraine and how that has affected me very, very much. And I think I needed something silly, again, to counterbalance the seriousness of it. And so I came up with the idea of an Agatha Christie-like whodunit, starring the people of the travel community that we know, all fictionalized versions of them. And it's a totally silly book, deliberately so. But I think everyone who's in it and they recognize the characters, they're loving it. It's so, so great. So I think there, once again, writing it was very therapeutic because I was able to just go any direction I wanted with an overactive imagination and not think of, you know, the devastation that's going on in the world.
We mentioned earlier that you are one of three people to travel to every country in the world twice. And, you know, we've had one of the other ones, Gunnar Garfors, she's a friend of mine on the show several times. Oh. So we're personal friends.
Of course he is. Yeah.
And so I had him on recently and we got his recommendations for, we called it, you know, seven countries that you should get to before everybody else does. And, you know, you have a unique take on this because you've been to all these places twice and you also run this community and you're seeing the big picture of travel quite a bit. And so, you know, as travelers, we're always looking for that, you know, we want to get to the place where like in 10 years or 20 years, people are like, oh, I can't believe you got to go there back in, you know, 2023, 2024, whatever, you know, like that's incredible. It must've been, you know, so what are those places? Give us three of those places. If you were going to come up with a few recommendations.
Moldova is still very Soviet, even in the Romanian speaking part.
It's been listed as one of the unhappiest countries in the world. You know that?
Oh, poor people. Well, it is the poorest country in Europe. So, you know, when you're poor, you're kind of unhappy, I suppose. But Moldova is really, really great for the traveler. And obviously, not many people go there unless they have a reason to. So I would definitely put it up there. And it is a European country. So, you know, you do get your creature comforts, some nice cafes. You know, it's not a difficult country to visit. I'm going to pick one in Africa. I think there are already some that are overly touristy and are spoiled. I think some of the Western African countries are still unexplored. I would say go to Sierra Leone, which has perhaps among the best beaches in Africa, and often you can have the beaches all to yourself. It's one of the friendlier African countries in terms of the people, also one of the safer ones overall. So it makes for a good trip without, you know, and you may never meet another traveler there. I would also say Tajikistan is fabulous, among the best mountains in the world in the region of Gorno-Badakhshan. If you want to peek into Afghanistan and are too scared of going to Afghanistan, then you can go to Tajikistan, and literally Afghanistan is across the river. If you've got a good zoom, you can get very good pictures of local Afghans across the river. So Tajikistan, again, is still recovering from its Soviet experience. But Tajikistan speaks a language which is close to Persian. So they are not a Turkic culture like the other stans. They are actually a Persian-based culture. And for that, it stands out compared to the other stans, to me. So it's definitely worth visiting. And I think it's probably one of the least visited and talked about stans. And not for good reason. It's a really beautiful country. Alexander the Great made it to Tajikistan in the town that's now called Hodjand. I think it was one of the most easterly places he went to. So there is a lot of history there as well.
If you had to live somewhere, you had to, like they say, you know, we're revoking your passport. We're going to let you pick any place, and then you're going to be, and you have to have, you know, your regular life. You're going to be part of a community. You're going to, you know, do your writing or whatever you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do, but you're going to spend like a solid 5-10 years there. Where are you going? Can't leave. Can't hell. Leave.
Hell. That is my definition of hell. But okay. If I have to spend all these, well, when we're talking about place, is it like a town or a country?
Okay, we will allow you to explore the country that you're in. Okay, let's say that.
All right.
But you still got to pick a place to have a base. You got to have a base somewhere there.
Right. Well, you know what? I'm going to pick Buenos Aires because it is, well, Argentina is big enough to explore, and it's got a lot of geographic variation. So you've got beaches, you've got snow in the south, and then in the north of Argentina, you've got arid, you know, pampas and the lot. So it's very varied. Great food, lots of good meat there. Sorry, I'm not vegetarian, so I wouldn't go hungry. I like those Latin cultures and the chaos they have. So that is something that resonates with me. And Buenos Aires, I mean, come on, it's a beautiful city, and it's also very cheap. So it works on all levels.
Argentina's my choice too. in that question. So I'm feeling you there. I'm feeling you. Yes. We can meet up in BA and have a coffee somewhere and something.
Sounds like a plan. I haven't been for a while, so it's a country I definitely want to return to soon. Yeah.
What is the most transformative trip you took, accidental or otherwise? You know, maybe perhaps it's a trip that you didn't expect to change your life so much, but
I'm gonna have to go back to when I wasn't a traveler, if we're talking about transformative. When I was doing my MBA, and I did that in the Netherlands, we had to do a summer project. And most people were finding projects in, you know, European countries or whatever. I landed a project in Hanoi. This was in 1996, so long before Vietnam became really popular and known. It was only beginning to open up. I think I spent 6 weeks in Hanoi in the summer of 96. I think that was transformative on every level. I had never really traveled alone so far away to a culture that different before that. It was also, we had a house stay because we were doing an internship. So we stayed with local people. And we got bicycles, and we were a group of five. There were two Americans, a Taiwanese, a Malaysian, and myself. I represented Europe there. I just think it was transformative because I was so young, and everything around me was unknown. And negotiating all those roads with all those thousands of bicycles, becoming one of them and riding the bike, that was great. So I remember that trip very fondly. In fact, it took me very many years to go back to Vietnam because I didn't want the memory of that trip to be in any way tarnished. So I cherish not going back. I only went back to Vietnam in 2014 for my second visit, far later than I should have. And it still remains one of my favorite countries because of that experience.
If you had to pinpoint the experience that kickstarted it all for you and led to, you know, all of the travels you've done, would that have been the trip?
Maybe. I mean, again, I was born to parents from different countries, as I said, and my father likes traveling. So in the late 70s, early 80s, we traveled much more than the average person would back then. I remember we had a month in the US when I was nine. We did a trip to the Far East as a family when I was 14. Back then, these things were not that common. You know, I remember being one of the only people in my school, and I went to a good private school, but I was one of the only ones to have had these experiences. So I think I was already geared toward traveling and questioning a lot more about our planet. But probably in terms of really saying travel is my life, yeah, that trip to Vietnam might have been that point. Yeah.
What is your best advice for somebody listening who wants to, I don't say build a life around travel because not everybody wants that, but they want to fill their life with as much travel as they possibly can, which is a big part of what the mission is of the show here. And, you know, everybody's got different situations and all that kind of stuff. So it's difficult and financial things and obligations and all that. But just from your perspective, I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Okay. I think it's very important to realize that in life, you can't have it all. I think it's important to realize if you really want to travel that much, there's a lot of things you're going to have to sacrifice. And the word sacrifice may sound heavy, but you might have to forget about owning a car. You might have to forget about having really constant contact with good friends, or at least live contact. You might have to forget things like the theater, cinema, events, you know, concert. Of course, you can do that while you travel, but not in a way that is culturally coherent in one place. So it's very important to be sure that you are aware of what you may not be able to do if you dedicate your life to travel rather than just being a casual traveler. That, to me, would be one piece of advice for younger people who may not have considered all that. You know, you often think, oh, it's great, I'm going to go. But no, what about the things you're leaving behind? I also think it's important to realize that travel will really change you. And that may mean that when you come back, if you ever do, you may find yourself disconnected. from the place where you started. Now, I guess both of these things sound negative, but they're not. They're actually the part of the transformative power of travel, and that's the good thing about it. But it's important to be aware of these things, because then maybe you'll decide that it's not for you after all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another thing you learn, right? Like, I'd rather go and find out if it's not for me than not go and wonder all the time, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any regrets with your choices?
Well, as a traveler, I think one of my regrets is that I didn't start earlier. Now in the community, I'm looking at people, you know, who are like 20 or 22, and they've already been to I don't know how many countries, and they're perpetual nomads and going around. And I'm thinking, well, why didn't I do that? Why did I invest all those years into studying and working and trying to be quote unquote normal? But I don't know if I actually regret that, though. You know, I think I needed to do that to get where I am. So it's not really a regret. It's more, though, a bit of a thought I have sometimes. I don't think it's good to live your life with regrets. I think it's important to appreciate things. And obviously, we've all maybe made mistakes or made some wrong choices. But they were all meant to be made so that we learn something from it. So the important thing is just to learn and try not to make the same mistake twice.
Cool. I had a great time chatting with you today, Harry. Of course, nomadmania.com will link up to it all. I mean, is there anywhere else if people want to get in touch with you? Is that the place to go, or your personal website? Or we'll link up to everything, but...
In reality, I've got an Instagram, Harry Nomad. You can find me there if you want to get in touch. I do have a website, but which is my name, harrymitsidis.com, but it's basically just it's more like a CV with all my media appearances, just so that I don't forget them. So you're going to be on there too at one point, I guess. But just Instagram, and do sign up with Nomad Mania.
Yeah, I hope I earned my spot there on the media list. We'll see. You'll have to listen back and be like, I don't know. I don't know if he cut it. You know, we'll see.
I think you do for sure. So.
Did you want to leave us with, you know, I mean, you've been exposed to so much culturally around the world. I'm wondering if there is like a cultural story or saying or some bit of wisdom that you kind of you carry with you that sticks with you as part of your day that you lean on, you know, that you want to share with everybody to close this out.
My only wisdom is smile. Smile even when people are not smiling back. And that will work nearly everywhere. It may not work in Russia, but keep your smile even in Russia, you know, and wear them out by smiling. That's the only thing. I really try to do that as much as possible. People may think I'm silly. In some cultures, like the Russian one, smiling is a weakness, but I won't accept that. So at the end of the day, I think that is what is important. I don't have any cultural wisdom otherwise. I think what is very important is not to judge other cultures based on your own. I think there's too much of that going on in the media and in what I'm seeing, people judging alien places and saying, this is not right. But culture, I learned as a student of sociology, is never wrong. Even if it may seem wrong, it can't be, because it's culture. It means that a specific group of people over a specific period of time developed that for a reason, usually as a survival mechanism. So even if things seem totally outrageous from our perspective, we cannot judge them, and it's important not to, and it's important to accept them and try to understand the background to why some things exist. That is very important.
That would be a whole other podcast we could dive into if I dive into that.
That would end up being very, very political, and we'd have to dodge some bullets there. So perhaps not a good idea.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think it's important. I hear what you're saying, but I also think it's important to challenge some things that are violating human rights, let's say that.
Yeah. But Jason, think about it. Are human rights maybe our culture? You know, did human rights exist in our countries 200-300 years ago? And I'm not saying I'm against them. God, no, you know, but are human rights maybe, you know, our culture today? And to what extent will they even exist in 100 years from now? That will also evolve. So what we take for granted as human rights, this is just, again, today's cultural manifestation in our cultures.
Yeah, but as you mentioned, they do evolve. And I'll use an example, like, you know, however many hundreds of years ago where they didn't know that soap would kill bacteria and all these people were dying. And then you learn, oh, we have this thing called soap and you can wash your hands before surgery. And now all these people don't have to die. Well, that's what I mean. Like when you evolve, you realize, okay, well, human rights maybe has evolved too. And maybe some cultures have not evolved with it in some way, or I don't know, maybe there's a comparison there. I don't know. Again, this is a whole other discussion.
You're definitely an optimist because you use the word evolved, but the way things are going now, I definitely think some things are backtracking. So let's see where we go, you know?
Well, yeah, where you left it, the smile, like wear them down with your smile. I love that. And you know, you're like the Muhammad Ali of smiling, right? You're just going to like keep smiling until you knock them out with
Keep
your smile
smiling.
And then they're like, all right, I guess this guy's happy. Let's go take him around the island and meet the I give up. He
exactly.
smiled me into submission.
Yeah. It works. Smiling is universal. And you see, smiling is not cultural. Smiling is universal, apparently. So there you go.
Well, unless you smile at a dog, don't they? They might see that that's like your teeth, you know, like, is he threatening me? Oh, come on. You got to watch out for those straight packs of stray dogs. You might not want to smile at them. But,
Indeed.
All right. Thanks, Harry. Let's do this again sometime.
Would love to. Thank you so much, Jason. All right. Take care.
Cheers.
There you have it. Want to thank Harry for stopping by the show and enduring all of my questions. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Of course, you can learn more about his project over there at nomadmania.com. And I love what he said there at the end. You know, we think about travel, we often think about inner exploration and cultural exploration, self-discovery, and, you know, just the ridiculousness and the humor in the world that you find on this giant stage that we're all players in. It's always an enjoyable part of travel, right? The humor out there and just what are we all doing? We don't know. We're just doing the best we can each and every day. And, you know, looking at it through that lens of sort of some of that ridiculousness and taking that light approach can be helpful on a travel day or a trip maybe where things are dragging. So I like what he shared there at the end. I'm going to leave you with a quote now. This one's from the quote drawer. The good old-fashioned quote drawer here on my desk. Let me pull this one out from Thich Nhat Hanh, who said, if we do not know how to take care of ourselves and to love ourselves, we cannot take care of the people we love. Loving oneself is the foundation for loving another person. There you go. That's a powerful one to leave you with there. And I will see you next time. Thanks again for listening. Peace and love to you and yours. Don't forget zerototravel.com/newsletter. If you haven't signed up, get on the newsletter so we can keep in touch. It's free. All right. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by zerototravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.